Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
We're at Reverence, the upscale restaurant on Frederick Douglass Boulevard and 138th Street in New York's Harlem, opened by renowned chef Russell Jackson just 6 months before the pandemic hit. It features floor-to-ceiling etched glass windows through which passersby can look in on a single room, a kitchen, really, with stainless steel refrigerators and cooking equipment lining the walls, and in the middle, a U-shaped wooden bar where up to 18 diners who've paid a fixed price of about $150 per person watch chefs at work on a large stainless steel cooking table and are then treated to up to 9 courses, along with food history and music, over a 2-hour communal chef's table dining experience. It's a room that's hard to describe.
Call it a jewel box. It's a 900-square-foot jewel box.
We've come to talk to Chef Russell about his own story, a transplant from California and a black chef who's been told he shouldn't be cooking white food. But we're also here to talk about the industry. Many mid and uptown New York restaurants are reportedly having trouble finding staff for several reasons, including increasingly rude diners put off by New York's requirement that they all be vaccinated. But patrons at Reverence fill out an online form providing proof of vaccination, and they also sign an online pledge. We know that you participated in the Aspen Institute's safety program. Right. What does that mean to you?
It means everything to me personally. We're a group of people that put together some very common sense, practical ideas and thoughts about how the hospitality industry needed to respond to COVID. The Diner Code of Conduct, which is really just a statement of saying, hey, look, we love you. We want you to enjoy yourself here, but we need you to follow some basic rules. Do this, do that. We'll do these things, and we'll all be good. In respect to finding workers to work for us, we don't have an issue. We also pay well above minimum wage, but we're also a house that thinks differently about how I treat my staff. This isn't just a job. This is a career. I'm building chefs here and restaurateurs.
In fact, one of those budding chefs fires up a blowtorch.
I'm just torching some radishes, some Nukazuki radishes.
What Chef Russell does share with other owners is the financial struggle. He received government PPP loans. He says they were small but helped. But he says the government has to replenish the Restaurant Revitalization Fund.
One of the greatest issues that we have, the RRF, the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, needs to be refilled. Congress needs to get their act together, and they need to get it done today because the restaurant industry is decimated. You may look at it from the outside and think, oh, well, restaurants are open and they're doing well, and I see that restaurant's full. Nah. Do you know how many people are gone? Do you know how many people are still on the verge of closing? There isn't the day that doesn't go by that I don't hear about a restaurant that was very strong, that was a great restaurant, that's been around for years, that have had to close their doors because they didn't get the money that they were qualified to get.
Funding ran out, only 100,000 restaurants got it, 200,000 didn't, and a lot of people felt that people who struggled to stay open didn't get it, but people who closed got it. There was a sort of an unfair playing field.
And also the IRC itself as a board said that women and people of color and LGBT restaurants should get a bite of the apple first because they're always at the end of the line and usually get the least amount. Other restaurants, especially large groups, have resources and access to money. Those guys can call up the bank and get a loan tomorrow. You know, we can't. It's a mess and everybody's trying to fix the problem. And the only solution is to put another $80 billion into the system immediately to make sure that all those people that are in line get made whole.
Well, we sat down with Chef Russell Jackson to talk about his path here and what happened when COVID hit.
We watched our businesses and our infrastructure implode overnight. Because this restaurant's in Harlem and we bring a very unique approach to food and the infrastructure, our business model, we had a little bit more leverage in that respect of trying to find some conventional, some small business loans that helped us to get running. As soon as we got our arms around what was going on, because it was such shock for all of us. There was a bit of a division of labor in my household. My wife, who had gotten laid off, turned around and I said, okay, you're going to hunt every single grant, application, loan, giveaway, you know, scratch it, whatever we can do to try to find money to keep the fuel going. And she turned it into a full-time job. We were one of the first four recipients of the Hello Alice grant program that's directed towards people of color and women and veterans. Discover Card, we won one of those grants. The Apollo grant we were awarded. There were small different tranches of money that came through. It didn't make us whole by any means. This last 18 months, I have dug a massive six-figure hole just keeping this restaurant alive. But I see and know what this restaurant's capable of doing. And for all the reasons that it should exist, it needs to exist.
You're very clear about this. You wrote a piece in Medium about how you're just exhausted from racism.
I wrote the Medium piece as to get out all of what was inside of me. I was afforded an extraordinary life. I was raised in a small beach community called the Palisades, Pacific Palisades. But there were moments of racism that occurred throughout childhood, going with my friends to a beach club and being made to leave the beach club. You know, it's like when you say that to a 12 or 13-year-old, how does your brain wrap around that, right?
Well, it goes on. You know, you like an Italian girl, but her father won't let her date you. Then you come into this industry, into the food industry.
All of the fine dining houses that I worked in, I was the only African-American cook that was in that restaurant. I was always the outlier. So I had to work faster, harder, better. And there were jobs that I wanted that I didn't get hired for.
Well, we have to be clear about that. You actually were hired for a couple of jobs just because of your resume and then showed up.
Yeah. I was told I was fired on the spot. No, I don't need you. Go out. And his partner pulled him aside and said they talked behind closed doors, which I could hear through. And basically she said, you cannot do this. He will sue the shit out of us if you do this. I walked back in and they said, okay, fine, you can go to work. But for me, that was a turning point in my career. That was, I'm never working for somebody else ever again.
Well, that brings us to, as a black chef, if you are recognized at all, there's an assumption about you that you're going to be the soul food chef.
Right. I'm a chef, but I'm a California chef. I'm trained in California cuisine and technique, which for me as a modern Californian, is French, Italian, Japanese, Hispanic, and Korean. Those are all the techniques that I definitively studied. Southern food, I don't do. It's part of my heritage, but it's not who I am.
Well, actually, you say you've been told to stay in your lane.
Yeah, absolutely. And people don't know how to classify. There was an immense amount of self-loathing. There was a willingness for me to whitewash my own pain. During the Floyd trial, we had incidents of racial hate against this restaurant.
Like what?
Well, we had an incident where somebody had covered the windows with excrement. It was soul-crushing to clean it up. I wanted to just close the doors and be done with this. And my crew surrounded me with love and support, and they proved to me again that the necessity for what we do is important here.
I can hear the emotion in your voice. You had mentioned when we first started talking about the importance of this restaurant in this place. I'm wondering, too, though, if there are people in Harlem who are wondering, what is this, you know?
Oh, absolutely. We're the only fine dining African-American chef-owned restaurant in Manhattan. And from what I'm starting to understand, possibly in the state. I wanted to do something good for this community.
But do they say to you, can people here afford this meal?
So I lived here in Harlem. And every time we tried to order food out, the limitations of what we could eat were like fried or unhealthy or barbecue. And every time I wanted a decent meal, I had to get in a cab and travel 30 to 50 blocks south. And for me, that was unjust. And there's a summer day and I'm walking down the street. I'm standing on 125th and Malcolm X. There's this group of kids that are standing on the corner and they're on their little fixie bikes and skateboards. And I'm looking at them. What I had was this sort of cathartic moment of, oh my God, that's me and my friends in 1972. There's no difference, except for one stark difference. They don't have the access to the amenities and the things that I grew up with. And I didn't feel that that was okay for me. I live in this neighborhood. I want to grow in this neighborhood. I'm raising my family in this neighborhood. And I've said this before. I look at Harlem as an iteration of Wakanda. All the things that it can be, artistically, musically, financially, so much wonderful talent that exists here. And it's had blinders and the reins put on it in a lot of cases. What I feel like is that people have been made to believe that they only deserve X. But the world is really Y and Z.
Why not let those kids see through this glass window?
Right.
Wow, what's going
Absolutely.
On in there?
Absolutely.
Chef Russell Jackson at Reverence, his 18-seat Harlem restaurant,